Inside COVID-19 from BizNews. In December last year, I last spoke with Robert Paddock, one of the co-founders of the Valentia Institute. Now, Robert, the Valentia Institute is a global online private high school, but your history in online education goes back a lot further than that. Get Smarter, which maybe many South Africans do know about, which you and your brother Sam built up, sold off to the NASDAQ listed to you, who I must ask you a little later about, by the way, whether we should be buying the shares because of COVID.
Sure.
But when you guys launched, it seemed like a brilliant idea. What has happened during the COVID pandemic? Have you found that demand for the Valentia Institute has increased?
Certainly, Alex. So we launched the business actually in September of 2019. So we had spent about 6 months before that building up the leadership team, raising some capital, and really plotting the path forward for the Valentia Institute. So we launched publicly in September of 2019. We had our inaugural cohort start with us in January of 2020, and then COVID hit in March of 2020. We certainly couldn't have foreseen that such a global pandemic was coming our way and that it was going to fundamentally disrupt the entire education sector, and very specifically in our case, the junior and high school sector. And it has had a fairly pronounced impact on the interest in the uptake of Valentia Institute. I would say the following, the interest has been off the charts. I mean, the amount of interest in the Valentia Institute and online schooling generally, I think parents are looking for a sustainable solution as they look to the future, and there's not a, and we don't see a solution or a vaccine anywhere on the near-term horizon. One of the things that parents are looking for themselves as well as their children is just consistency and certainty. And unfortunately, just brick-and-mortar schools can't offer that at the moment. And my heart goes out to brick-and-mortar schools because none of us could have foreseen this coming, right? We've been really thrilled with the interest. The uptake locally and abroad has been really substantial. And so we're now on a fairly substantial growth path right now.
Just if you can, share with us what your projections were like and how the COVID-19 pandemic has changed those.
Yeah, so certainly I wouldn't be able to share specific numbers with you. But based on our initial projections, our uptake has increased about 100% on top of what we had previously expected. It's been really wonderful to see. I think, understandably, a lot of parents, particularly when the pandemic first hit, were kind of biding their time trying to figure out, how serious is this? Is it worth taking my kid out of school and placing them into an online high school? Let's just see how it goes with the existing brick and mortar schools trying to make their transition into online. And I think what's been very interesting for us is, particularly as we look forward towards our September and our January intakes, those numbers are looking exceptionally strong, more than 100% on top of what we had previously expected. And I think that the penny has really dropped, that this pandemic is not going away, that even though schools are reopening, there are countless examples of brick and mortar schools that are reopening right now. And unfortunately, what happens is that when you cram 1,000 kids into a single space, it just takes one infected student to start that infection process. And what ends up happening is that schools are opening, closing down again, reopening, having to close down just a few days later. And it's causing immense disruptions for the learners as well as for their parents. So I think we're seeing that a lot of parents are saying enough is enough. We need to find a sustainable solution here.
Robert, just for a recap, what ages do you take?
We are a full high school, so we take students from currently in grades 8, 9, 10 and 11. We're busy building out our grade 12 and our one-year post-matric program as well. We are hoping in the next year, year and a half max, to also build out a grade 7 option for our students as well.
And what is the difference between their attendance of Valentia High School and perhaps some of the brick and mortar schools that are now also offering online options?
Yeah, it's a really important question. I think it's important to remember that brick and mortar schools have been operating in the same fashion for a very long time. The nature of the teachers who have gravitated towards those institutions have been trained in a particular paradigm of education. And this is a seismic shift for a lot of these schools to actually move into a online modality. And what ends up happening, and again, this is not a dig at brick and mortar teachers because this is what they've been trained to do. This is what they have done for a very long time. When they make the transition into online, what ends up happening is basically just very long, fairly didactic Zoom classes. There might be some integration with something like Google Classroom or MS Teams where students can submit their assignments, and there might even be some discussion forums and so on. But the nature of online education is needs to fundamentally considered and built from the ground up. If you want a truly rich and engaging learning experience, that actually starts in the learning design process far before you've ever had your first students join your classroom. So you're designing for the context in which these learners find themselves very specifically. The sorts of examples that would play out with that, one needs to think about the fact that these kids are all sitting at home, and that one of the things that students crave, both for their developmental process and just for their own enjoyment, is social engagement. But if you don't provide the tools and the meaningful opportunities for learners to engage with each other, be that in collaborative project work, be that in virtual clubs and so much more, you're going to miss out on the critical dynamic of what the school experience is about. And unfortunately, just in the rush for a lot of brick and mortar schools moving online, those sorts of elements have just been completely bypassed. And again, with full empathy for what teachers are going through right now, they're just trying to survive and try to get through the material, as it were. One other thing that I would say, Alec, is that the support mechanisms that are put in place for learners in the online environment need to be fundamentally considered again, given the context in which these learners find themselves studying online. So as an example, we have dedicated teachers whose sole responsibility is facilitating online learning. There's a totally separate team of administrators who deal with the plethora of back-end administration that ends up coming up in an online learning experience. There's a totally separate team of mentors. These are education psychologists and counselors who are engaging every single day with the learners, tracking their learning analytics, tracking their progress, proactively intervening to keep them on track, and then, of course, making sure that they have time for socio-emotional development, psychosocial development. And that's something that you actually need to schedule into the calendar, because it doesn't, in the traditional school system, it just kind of happens in corridor conversations on the side, or you notice that Johnny's looking a little bit disengaged at the back of the classroom. Let me go have a conversation with Johnny after class. Those kind of data points, again, unless you design specifically for the online learning environment in mind, are totally missing. And in our environment, we've had to set up incredibly sophisticated learning analytics tools to make sure that we can track and monitor the individual progress of every student and proactively intervene where we see them falling behind, or make sure that we create opportunities for those proactive interventions along with pastoral care or academic interventions and so on. There's a separate team for project management. There's a separate team for technical support and so on and so on. So this modality of online education, if we are designing it for the context in which these learners find themselves, actually, in terms of the organizational structure, is very different from the brick and mortar school system.
Sounds a little bit like when Elon Musk decided to design an electric car. He didn't start with an internal combustion engine first. He went directly to that, whereas the old-fashioned car makers are trying to re-engineer to go into, and that must be a huge learning curve. Are there parallels?
There's absolutely parallels. And I think that the user-centered design, and again, I keep using this word context because it is so important. The context of a learner when they are sitting at home is fundamentally, their needs of that learner are fundamentally different from what you would find for a learner who is coming to a brick and mortar classroom every day and so on. The parallels are bang on. We have spent an incredible amount of time, energy, and had to employ very specific professionals with the right experience in order to design and develop the learning experience for our students here at Valencia Institute. And again, with absolutely no judgment of brick and mortar teachers, because their context has been so consistent for a very long time, unfortunately just not well suited to do this work. And that's not to detract from the heroic efforts of a lot of teachers, but unfortunately the substandard experience that a lot of parents and students are experiencing in this, what I would call kind of remote learning right now, I get it. Like, and I see where it comes from. And yet what I would say is that there is an online education experience that is so engaging, so contextually appropriate when you come to a purpose-built institution like Valencia Institute.
So you guys never advertise. I guess you never have to advertise because of the demand. But in this COVID period where people have had to work from home and children or their learners have also had to try to learn from home, I'm sure anybody who knows about you would very quickly have said, look, I'm not made to teach my children. How do I get into Valencia? I see you closed off yesterday another group. How does that whole process work? How has it been working? And have you been able to take more people in when they do reach those kind of crisis situations in the home?
You know, we've been trying to be as flexible as possible while still making sure that we set our students up for success. So you're absolutely right. We have a new cohort, which the applications just closed yesterday. We are making a plan, and what we can't guarantee that we will be able to accept any student that applies in between official cohort start dates. But we are doing our best to try and accommodate students who come to us in what we would call kind of midstream intakes. So as an example, with this group that has now started yesterday, if students for the next 2 or 3 weeks, parents or students contact us, we are doing our best to make a plan to make sure that we do the diagnostic assessments in time, to make sure that we have a dedicated team to onboard those learners and to try and get them set up for success. If they're not able to get hold of us soon, we would need to look towards a September cohort intake. We've had our first cohort in January. We've had a July intake now and a September intake. So thankfully, there are these three periods every single year where we're bringing students in. And maybe just a point on that, Alec, for us, it's really important that learners have a social experience in this online learning domain. And for that reason, this is not a start anytime, finish anytime, kind of progress with the content as you see fit and as you have the inclination. This is a very highly structured, highly supported, socially rich learning experience. So students come on as a cohesive student cohort. They're immediately put into small tutorial groups where they have the intimate support of their expert teachers, of mentors, like I've mentioned, technical support officers. There's a huge emphasis on collaborative project work for all of these learners. And we found that we're actually able to create an incredibly rich social environment for these learners.
Just to go back a little, Get Smarter, when did you get the idea and when did that begin?
That started in 2007. My brother and I actually joined what was then my father and mother's property law firm, and we helped them to take a series of property law programs online with the University of Cape Town. Now, that back then, online learning was, or e-learning as it was called then, was kind of seen as this dirty word. And we really took it upon ourselves to prove that, in fact, it's possible to achieve substantial academic results and very high student satisfaction rates and create a really commercially attractive revenue stream for our university partners. That idea was really forged in 2007. We continued to then launch a number of property-related courses out of my father's business. And I think it was about late 2008, early 2009, we recognized that there was an increasing demand for programs that were outside of the property sphere. We needed to launch an appropriate business in order to provide the solutions. We launched Get Smarter. And we were very lucky to work predominantly with the University of Cape Town for our first few years. We broadened out slightly to work at the University of Stellenbosch and University of Witwatersrand as well, predominantly offering short courses entirely online to working professionals with our university partners. We actually grew those partnerships to start to offer a number of master's degrees, postgraduate diplomas, and so on, all entirely online, which was fairly groundbreaking for the South African education system at the time. In about 2014, we started looking around and thinking, jeepers, very ambitious, and we wanted to grow. And we thought that what we were doing at Get Smarter was something fairly unique. And at least our academic achievements were unparalleled at that time. And so we started reaching out to the world's best universities, started living on a plane, just knocking door to door. And eventually we got lucky with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. We launched a fintech course right at the time where kind of cryptocurrency and so on was really taking off. And on our very first course with MIT, we had over 2,000 students from 154 countries around the world studying with us. And it was, for MIT, it was in fact the highest netting revenue online program that they had launched to date. And it's opened up just a world of opportunity for us after that with other universities such as Harvard, Stanford, Oxford, Cambridge. And that business is in incredibly good state right now, Alec. I'm thrilled to say we sold to a NASDAQ-listed company called 2U back in 2017. My brother and I both left the business at different points in 2018. But the business has got an incredible local leadership team, and I'm thrilled to say it's continued to go from strength to strength and is going to be achieving record numbers this year. It would be unfair of me to share publicly, but is doing exceptionally well right now.
So 2U would be kind of the education or the online education equivalent of Zoom. It's one of those companies that just is in the right place at the right time, perhaps.
Completely. And I would say that at least in terms of share price, there's still a lot of upside potential in that business. I think it's a very attractive business to look at from an investment perspective.
And from your perspective now, you giving back to South Africa, you are helping people in this country go into the online area where I suppose it might even matter more than at a university level, at the school level. How much runway do you have? How much capacity do you have? And I ask this question because many are saying, here's the opportunity now in the darkness for government to completely reassess how it gets education to the learners of South Africa?
Alec, this is a really important question. And for us, it's been a key consideration from the outset in launching Valencia Institute. So to be clear, Valencia Institute, we're incredibly proud of what we are doing. It's this high-touch, socially rich, internationally accredited organization with students from all around the world. The price point is in the region of $4,000 to $6,000 per student per year. And I think that whilst that is incredibly attractive for a lot of individuals in South Africa, for the vast majority of this country and indeed this continent, that is completely out of reach. So we from the outset have had a strong social initiative. We partnered with the with Stonehage Fleming and the Principals Academy right from the outset to launch a trust called, a not-for-profit trust called the Abodi Trust. And really what we're trying to do there, Alec, is prove that there is another way of thinking about education and another blueprint for scaling quality education in South Africa to those who need it most. So what we've done there, and maybe, sorry, the explanation here is quite important. Online only for low LSM groups is not a suitable initiative. I just want to put a little bit of meat on the bone there. When we talk about online education and we think about just like putting a tablet in every learner's hands and that and give them internet access and somehow magically that's going to solve the problems of education, that is just wrong. It is wrong at a very high level. It's low resolution thinking. We're not understanding, again, the context in which a lot of these learners find themselves. Home is not a particularly conducive environment and certainly not safe for a lot of individuals who would otherwise be at kind of low fee or fee-free schools. So we have to think, I mean, truly one of the functions that schools perform in those sorts of regions is that of safe harbor from the harsh realities of home. So we have to be thinking about a blended learning solution when it comes to that kind of socioeconomic bracket where we really need to affect change. I won't bore you with the details, but we did some experimentation at Get Smarter, and then I brought that forward into the Valencia Institute with blended learning initiatives, which effectively have all of the academics taking place entirely online, but you're still coming into a physical space every day, and you have the oversight of the adult supervision of someone on the ground who performs that kind of pastoral care function, who's recruited from that local community. So we launched, in collaboration with the Western Cape Education Department, we actually launched our first Abodi Trust project and classroom in Mitchell's Plain in January of this year. That classroom is a previously unutilized classroom that was being used as a storeroom. We turned it into what we call a digital classroom. Learners come into that space every single day. It looks more like a co-working space. So there's desks set up, laptop computers for the learners. They come in and they complete all of their academics online. One of the biggest benefits of that is that we're able to link great teachers, wherever they are located around South Africa or the world, with these learners. And now something to be clear on is that high quality teachers can have disproportionately good outcomes or can achieve disproportionately good outcomes for their learners. The issue is that for a lot of the most challenged and challenging schools, good teachers don't stay very long because the circumstances are just so dire. The pay is better if they move to formal Model C schools or the private sector. They can go live and work in nicer areas. So why would you stay in rural Eastern Cape if you could go and live in a metropolitan area and enjoy a better quality of life and enjoy better pay? So unfortunately, what ends up happening, and this is just a systemic issue that's not going away, is that the students who need the highest quality teaching and learning end up getting the, unfortunately, amongst the lowest. And so for me, one of the key mechanisms and ideas here is we need to find a sustainable way of linking high quality teachers with learners, regardless of where they are individually geographically located. And the model that we have in this blended learning classroom is achieving exactly that. In addition, though, what we recognize is that the learners still need adult supervision. They're coming into a space. They need that pastoral care. They need someone who cares about them as an individual, who culturally can identify with them and who can support them on their journey. And for that, we recruit what we call local mentors. So these are kind of mothers of the community. They don't need to be highly qualified teachers. What we're looking for is empaths, people who genuinely care about these learners. And at a ratio of 1 to 30, we're able to put these mentors on the ground and provide that critical pastoral care in addition to the high quality academic support that these students are getting online from their network of teachers around the country. And Alec, it's working. It's really exciting to see the progress. This year has been interesting because, of course, when COVID hit, they couldn't come into the blended learning classroom anymore. But because all of the academics are taking place online, this group is one of very, very, very few students at this sort of quintile of school who have managed to continue with their studies completely uninterrupted throughout COVID. So we're launching a number of additional classrooms around the country. And really our biggest hope is that in the long run, we're going to be able to get government support and funding behind this project, because the good news, and this is really the key piece here, we're at scale, we're able to achieve high quality education that can scale up fast at 20,000 Rand per learner per year. The government currently spends 19,000 Rand per learner per year, excluding capital expenditure. So it costs somewhere between 40 and 60 million Rand to build a school. And then there's still upkeep of the physical infrastructure and 19,000 Rand per learner per year that we're currently spending to achieve incredibly unimpressive outcomes and educational achievements right now. And we're really excited to be collaborating with the Western Cape Education Department on this project. And they've been incredibly dynamic and supportive thus far. So we're looking forward to seeing where that goes.
Inside COVID-19 from BizNews.